Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Football Weekly Extra. Man United in trouble with Wigan, but like when Cristiano Ronaldo claimed on his smashed up Ferrari, they gain redemption from Carlos and Carrick, but that bit doesn't work. Your pod says, well done, boys. And with the title race all but sorted, what will this mean for the battle at the bottom? And what about Tevez's new deal? Elsewhere, we've got more copper coverage than a roll of that insulating tape you use on wiring. With exciting cup finals in Italy and Spain, where I thought Athletic Bilbao were a team of Australian hobbits, until Sid's report on the Copa del Rey. There's more. Bayern signing Luis van Gaal. Berlusconi's latest outburst. Steve Cobble's exit at Reading. Your posts. And a look forward to the weekend in the Premier League in Football Weekly Extra. On board today. Let's see. We have a Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
We have one Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
And we have one Barney Roney.
Hello.
And Barney's apple as well.
I didn't want to talk about the apples.
All right, then. I think that level of stereotypical behaviour is comforting for us all.
I think people think it's a deliberate gimmick or something, but I just like eating an apple at this time in the morning.
Right, okay.
You're a hardcore apple fan.
Oh, you pipped me to that one.
That's very pithy.
Sorry, was that... You're losing your appeal there, Barney Roney.
All right, that's enough.
Because otherwise we'll be getting onto tart and stuff like that. Anyway, now, Trickery says, after complaining about last year, if they're not prepared to cut these pods short when they've nothing interesting to talk about, perhaps they could... Oh, no, this is a serious suggestion. They could label the pod, good idea, with a level of interestingness. Today's, Monday's apparently was about a 30%. Last Thursday's would have been about 80%. What kind of figure are we going to put on this? Because there's an awful lot happening.
Well that post, 0%.
I think you need to work hard at a pod, don't you? You can't just label it like that. Maybe it'll be good, maybe it won't. It's like a relationship. It's give and take.
All right, Barney, that's wise words.
How much did he pay to listen to this pod?
Yes. Now, Man United Wigan. That's the freshest bit of football for us to discuss in English football terms. United playing shockingly. Barney, you were all over this game, yes?
I thought they played pretty poorly until they scored, actually. I thought it's maybe it was to do with the rain or the pitch, but there's a lot of... The whole United... play seemed to consist of a lot of long balls and then a lot of back heels that didn't work. That was the kind of combination of the two.
There was a back heel that did work, though.
That's a fantastic goal, wasn't it?
Carlos Tevez.
Yeah, instinctive finish.
Right. Begbian says, Paul Dogg, care to re-evaluate your opinion of Tevez as a poor man's dirt cow after his galvanising effect last night?
See, that's maybe misquoted. I said a rich man's dirt cow.
Ah, right.
By which I meant he was slightly better than dirt cow.
Right. A sort of luxury version.
Dirt Cow Deluxe.
Right. But care to reevaluate your opinion?
No, I stand by that.
A bit of Dirt Cow, because Dirt Cow's maybe a bit of a
I think Alex Ferguson said something similar last week.
Did he?
When he sort of...
called him a trier.
Yeah, he said he works hard.
I mean, there's a context, doesn't there? United are talking about negotiations. Well, in theory, there is no negotiation because there's a deal they have to pay $22 million. So therefore, what they mean is we want to buy Tevez, but not at that price. So therefore, you start talking down his abilities slightly. I think there's a lot. I mean, this could wrangle on for a while. I mean, it's confusing with his contract. Maybe be owned by whoever. There's all the complexities of this deal. But I still think United want to keep him, just not at that expense.
Mm. All right.
Well, I mean, it's just so boring, isn't it, Carlos Tevez? I can't be the only person who finds it incredibly boring.
No,
ever since he came into English football, he's been a massive problem.
He's owned, as you put it, by another man.
Owned by another man. Not a good idea, is it?
To be honest, I mean, the fans aren't bored. You go there, you find them chanting Fergie, Fergie, sign him up and so on. It's quite a big issue at United, who are themselves quite a big club. So, I mean, I think it's worthy of our attention.
Well, it's sort of replaced, are we going to win the league or not, as a big issue, because that seems to have been resolved. I'm sure it's interesting if you're a United fan.
I think everyone thinks Tevez is terrific, don't they, apart from Paul Doyle?
I'm not saying he's a bad player.
Right.
Can I make that clear?
Okay.
No, I'm actually with Paul. I think he's a good player, but I wouldn't want to pay $10 million over 2 years and another $22 million for him. I can see why United have reservations about the price.
Does he have more impact than the other fellow, Berbatov, or is he just more visible?
Well, he scored 5 league goals this season, which is not superhuman.
Yeah.
Although last night's one was rather clever, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But
on the weekend as well.
But I think he can do better than that. I think he's been a bit, in a way, he seems a bit rattled by Berbatov's arrival. Even though Tevez has still started loads of big games, but he seems to have a bit kind of put out by Berbatov being there.
But Kevin, do you think there's a little bit that his impact at United is slightly emphasised by the fact they don't have a lot of scufflers in their team. Yeah, they don't have a midfielder who plays like he plays, so he runs on and tackles people.
I sometimes think he tries too hard, in fact, just to try and show how keen he is, and it's often the runs aren't necessarily all that intelligent.
Mm. Kevin, wasn't it you who described him as not a poor man's Wayne Rooney, but like a pale imitation of Wayne Rooney?
On his bad days, he makes the runs Rooney makes, but without the kind of decisive pass at the end of them or whatever. But only in his bad days. I think sometimes he gets wound up and he runs almost too much.
Right. Yeah. Just wanted to say, well done, Carrick. Another one of those unsung midfield heroes. A great goal to win the game.
Well, I remember a time when we all thought it was absurd to spend $15 million on him, and this seems like darn good business. He keeps the play rolling. Maybe he doesn't score enough, but what a goal it was, his left foot last night to win the game at Wigan. I mean, it was. I think the fact that his left foot meant he didn't thrash at the ball too much, and that actually helped. It's glided into the corner.
It arguably also destroyed Tottenham for two seasons, losing Carrick.
Yeah, I mean, it's as time goes on, as I say, you do think more and more of him.
Yeah, okay.
Mentioning Tottenham now have Wilson Palacios in the middle, who was recommended to Steve Bruce by Arsene Wenger, having been taken by Wenger on trial at Arsenal, and apparently not quite impressing enough. But it seems like a bit of a misjudgment. Arsenal could have done with him this season.
Mm. All right, well, they're going to Old Trafford again on Saturday. Andre Ashavin, is he back from his viral discomfort?
Apparently he'll be playing.
Any chance that Arsenal are going to turn that one around?
Well, so certainly Arshavin will make a difference compared to the Premier League performance.
The Champions League performance.
He's instrumental in most of what they do well going forward now. But again, in the Champions League, they were dominated in midfield because of United's superior dynamism and as well as their slickness, of course. And that may not change, although, again, as everybody says, on a good day, Arsenal can beat anyone.
Mm, as they did at the Emirates earlier this season against Manchester United.
I mean, they do like that physical presence, don't they? At centre-half and some centre midfield, and United saw that and went for them in both games. You know.
Well, United only need a point either against Arsenal or Hull in the final game of the season to secure the title. And there you go. So that's a done deal. Hey, they're not going to lose both games. They're 6 points clear, two games to go. Now, what does that mean for the relegation battle? Liverpool, for example, by the time they play West Brom on Sunday, I think many people would predict that the title will already be lost. Will that significantly boost West Brom's attempts to pull off the Great Escape Mark II?
I think West Brom is just about finished, aren't they?
Right, okay.
They haven't conceded too many goals. I think Liverpool would win, come what may.
All right. The relegation battle, of course, has seen the dramatic developments at St James's Park since last we spoke. Kevin, you were there. None of us were expecting much from this game, but it was certainly an eventful match.
Yeah, it was fantastic to be there. I mean, but you could see all the while why they were both at the wrong end of the table. I mean, there's Newcastle, great effort, and Viduka, thankfully for them, you know, gave one of his rare command performances.
As did Kevin Nolan.
Yes, indeed. Well, he was
offside
at one goal.
Fouled on another one.
Yeah. A key contributor. But also, people just lived up to stereotypes. Newcastle, with a lot of trying and huffing and puffing, but not really all that decisive until the very end, until Martins came on. And Middlesbrough, you think, yeah, they play quite nicely, but they all say that about Middlesbrough, and they always fail to get from the game what they should take from it. It was the first time that Shearer could claim to have made an impact by taking off Owen. People were sort of kind of writing him off, and no doubt he'll be looking for a new club. But I think it does take a while to come back from injuries. I'm not sure whether I would necessarily assume that we won't see him scoring more goals in the future.
It's six games under Alan Shearer. Michael Owen has mustered four shots. There you go.
It's not good enough, really, is it?
It isn't, is it? Now, Newcastle are hosting Fulham in another of those must-win home fixtures, although they are now out of the bottom three.
There's a feeling they might have to win no more games because Hull are a kind of death wish at the moment. The prayer in Tyneside is that Newcastle will stay up regardless now.
Now, we were discussing, I think, Hull's downward descent, and you made the very valid point that it's actually a typical parabola for an overachieving newly promoted side to then slump completely. But I was trotting this theory out as my own to some other people, until I then read, because you were basically saying that it wasn't all about Phil Brand's decision to castigate his players or chastise his players in front of the whole crowd, and it wasn't necessarily a split dressing room. I then read last week that he attempted at a bit of team building. by taking the team to Chester Races last Wednesday, which is apparently a lovely place to go. And the entire first team unanimously turned him down.
Yeah. It was interesting. They said it was because they didn't think it would be right going on a jolly before. But I don't think they didn't turn him down when he suggested a team-building trip to Dubai a few weeks previously.
I think I'd like to extend an apology for my remarks last week, which are clearly wrongly founded. I honestly did think they would beat Stoke at home. Now, having failed there, you think, God, well, where are they going to get the points?
Yeah, I think a big factor in their descent, of course, which was, as Kevin says, predictable. And I think Phil Brown foresaw it, which is one of the reasons why he spent so much money on Jimmy Bullard. The fact that he got injured within seconds of his arrival has been a very bad thing.
So the relegation games, Portsmouth on Monday night will be hosting Sunderland, who are not entirely out of the woods themselves. Newcastle taking on Fulham on the weekend, and Bolton hosting Hull, while West Brom take on Liverpool. So not over yet, that relegation battle, by any means. Part one over then. Coming up shortly, Telefonica permitting, we will be speaking to Sid Lowe, the cup final in Spain, and all sorts of other excitements too.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Now, listeners, Sid Lowe is on a train on his way back from Valencia. Is that right, Sid?
That's right, from last night's Copa del Rey final between Barcelona and Athletic Bilbao.
Right, now there might be some interference with tunnels and other assorted obstacles, so let's crack straight on then, Sid. How was it? Start with the reaction to the anthem. Was there all that trouble you were predicting?
Yeah, there was a little bit, but what's really interesting is not so much just the reaction, but the way that Televisión Española, the state channel, dealt with it. As expected, a Basque team and a Catalan team, there was quite a lot of whistling of the national anthem. But what TVE did was to try and disguise this. They cut to Bilbao when the national anthem was being played to show what the atmosphere was like in the streets of Bilbao. Then they cut to Barcelona to the national anthem to show what the atmosphere was like in the streets of Barcelona. And then when they came back to Mestalla, where obviously the stadium where the game was being played, the national anthem finished.
The national anthem had finished, listeners. Paul?
That's quite interesting, because in France last year, when they played a friendly against Morocco, the French national anthem was booed, and the French establishment were outraged by this and announced that they changed the law, saying that from now on, if the French national anthem is booed at any match, the match must be stopped immediately.
Good Lord, but it hasn't already been started.
It hasn't started. Well, the match cannot proceed until everyone has sung along lustily and patriotically.
Good Lord.
Well, there's more to tell you about the national anthem, because it's even worse than that, and it makes TV look like a right bunch of idiots, because not only did they not show the national anthem at half-time, they said, oh, we're sorry, we made a mistake, we meant to show the national anthem, and we didn't. So here it is. So at half-time they showed the national anthem, but they spent 45 minutes blocking out the whistles. So they showed a censored version of the national anthem at half-time, with the whistles brought down and the music brought up, and some shots of the very few people in the crowd that were standing attentively.
Russell Brand had an amusing column in The Guardian on Saturday about the lyrics of the English or British national anthem. I was wondering, are there any amusing thoughts on the Spanish one? Is it all about, you know, slaying heathens and the like?
Well, this is the big story about the Spanish national anthem. Of course, this happened going into the last World Cup and so on, and the European Championships, is that the Spanish national anthem has no lyrics. So the official lyrics of the Spanish national anthem are la 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 la, or da 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 da, or ta ra ta ra ta ra, depending on how you want to say it. And there was a suggestion, from the Spanish Olympic Committee that this was one of the reasons why Spain weren't succeeding in international tournaments, and perhaps they should come up with some lyrics, belt it out before games, and really get into it. Now, of course, the problem is that what they did was they opened this up for a competition and invited people to suggest lyrics and all the rest of it, and the winning entry, basically the whole country said, well, that's a bit shit, isn't it? And everybody said it's very, very cliché, very awful, and of course it is, because you can't just create
Listen, Sid, is everyone else in your carriage turning around and wondering who that loud English person is? No,
what I've done is I've gone for the little joiny bit between carriages, so I'm being buffeted around, but me and another woman are on the phone. She's looking at me like I'm talking rather loudly, and she's probably right.
For her benefit and for ours, then, tell us about the game. Athletic Bilbao smash 4-1. As Barcelona lift the Copa del Rey for the first time in over a decade.
A brilliant performance from Barcelona. They were one down after just 9 minutes, a goal from Toquero, who's basically this second division B player that Athletic have picked up, who the fans have taken under their wing almost as a mascot because he's rubbish, but he runs around a lot. A brilliant goal. Touré sprinting from the back all the way through, went round a couple of players and thumped it in. Leo Messi was phenomenal, absolutely fantastic last night. Barcelona were brilliant. They won 4-1, a goal for Messi, a goal for Bojan Krušić as well. He scored a really, really nice goal. And then a curling free kick from Xavi Hernandez. It was 4-1. It could have been 6 or 7. And in the end, what was really nice, the final whistle, the referee blew the final whistle.
Oh, we did. Sid, are you there?
That's for dissing the Spanish national anthem.
Ah, he's back, he's back. What was really nice, Sid? We lost you. You said what was really nice, the referee blew the final whistle and...
And the Athletic Bilbao fans were the ones that roared their approval and cheered and applauded because their players had waited 25 years to be in a final. 60,000 of them went to Valencia, about 25 or 30,000 got into the ground. And the Barca fans went and applauded them. They got a round of applause from both sets of fans of the lap of honour. The players joined together to applaud the fans at the end. And everybody said about this, with the exception, of course, of the booing of the national anthem, that this was a fantastic event in terms of both sets of fans and a brilliant, brilliant performance from Barcelona.
Sid, three quick questions from me. OK, first one, do they get a place in the Europa League, Bilbao?
Yes, they do, because obviously Barcelona will have a Champions League place. And not only that, they get a place in the Spanish equivalent of the Charity Shield against Barcelona.
Great news. Any truth to the stories that Real Madrid have struck a £71 million euro deal to sign Cristiano Ronaldo from Manchester United?
Well, they believe that they have the option to buy him, but of course the sticking point is still going to be Manchester United themselves. So I believe that the deal is in place with Cristiano Ronaldo, but probably not with Manchester United just yet.
Okay. M. Meister says, whatever happened to the supposed takeover by Freddie Shepherd of Mallorca?
Freddie Shepherd, just like the other Englishman who was going to buy Mallorca, Paul Davidson, the plumber. But as I think I said back at the time when Paul Davidson was looking after it, as a plumber, he wasn't much good. But he came in, had a look around, and left them still in the shit. Mallorca still are looking for a buyer. They're in terrible financial trouble, but what they have done as an institution is really stabilised since Christmas with a new president who's looking for buyers, and that's enabled them to be the fourth, I think it is, best side in Spain in the second half of the season and comfortably survive relegation. So they're a much more attractive purchase option than they would have been, say, 6 months ago.
Brilliant. Okay, and a final question from me at least. Slasher says, Dr. Sid, are you doing anything next Friday, 22nd of May, around 9 p.m, because he's going to be playing a game with his touring university old boys side and they need a central midfielder. I don't know if you'd be up for that. I can email that through to you if you like.
I'm always delighted to play games of football whenever
there's
one available.
Slasher. All right. Well, nice to have you on the line in every sense. And does anybody else have anything else for Sid before tunnels or...
Yeah. Well, I actually think we might get away with this reception-wise because we're slowing down. We must be about to stop in Albacete, which is a brilliant place because Albacete, as the phrase goes in Spain, Albacete, cagate y vete. In other words, Albacete, take a dump and get out of there. There's nothing else to do.
Is that what you'll be doing?
No, I'm just going to stay on the train, I think, and carry on to Madrid.
Right, yeah, excellent. Okay, thank you so much, Sid.
My pleasure.
France, it's very tight, Paul Doyle.
Oh, yes, it is. Marseille and Bordeaux are level on points at the top, separated only by goal difference.
Right. How are Lyon doing with that third place playoff thing?
They're still in third, a point ahead of PSG, thanks to a 3-0 win last night over at Nantes, I think it was, or at home to Nantes. However, they're still not happy with their season, and L'Equipe are reporting this week that there's going to be a huge clear out in the summer. Manager Claude Puel will probably stay, but they reckon up to 10 first-team players are going to go, including the likes of Juninho, who's obviously been central to their success for the last 7 seasons. He's now considered past it and is contemplating a lucrative switch to somewhere in the Middle East. I can't remember, like Qatar or somewhere like that.
Right.
And so there's Fabio Santos, a pretty good Brazilian midfielder who was brought in to start the season, who was sacked yesterday for disciplinary reasons, but he never got on with Puel. And actually, speaking of disciplinary reasons, I have to mention the match between Bordeaux and Valenciennes. Valenciennes, always a tough place to go. They're a lowly team. Bordeaux had to go there last night. Bordeaux already knew that Marseille had won 2-0 earlier in the day, so it was important that they won. They fell behind early on. Came back 1-2-1. Gourcuff, the player of the season, has scored in the dying minutes. Prompted a huge outpouring of anger from the Valenciennes players towards the referee. Two of them were sent off. After the match, Valenciennes' president, Francis de Courrières, was picked up on camera, and unlike Sid, I'm going to give children a warning here to cover their ears. He said to the referee, "You are a disgrace to humanity, the leftover shit in a bidet."
My word, eh? It's kind of drug brisk.
Yeah, indeed.
But meanwhile, it's similarly tight in Scotland. Rangers had made the title theirs to lose.
They won the Old Firm game, but last night they drew 1-1 at Hibs amidst disputes of whether a ball had crossed the line or not, although TV evidence wasn't conclusive. But that had it been given, that would have given, that probably given Rangers a... put them on the way to victory at in Edinburgh.
A lot of people are talking about how important winning the league would be to Rangers given their financial situation.
Well, I mean, this season, for example, they knocked out of the Champions League in the second qualifying round, so that was the end of the European campaign. The winner of the Scottish Premier League goes into the group stage, and this team at second has to go through the qualifiers, which are very hard nowadays, or could be very hard because of the restructuring of the tournament. You can play big teams. Rangers have a lot of financial trouble. I mean, David Murray has pumped in money in the past to bring the debt down. But, you know, having no European football this season has exacerbated matters. I must say, though, Scottish football, it's only two teams. And most countries don't have any more than three now, do they, competing for titles, by and large? So the world's becoming Scottish as things move on. Yeah. They were the trendsetters. But but quite often you have this situation the last day, it will happen again, of no doubt the league trophy being beside some helicopter somewhere until they wait. No, seriously, until they discover who's won the league and then it gets brought in. So it's quite dramatic. It's low in quality but high in interest.
Well, excellent. The inverse of that, some would say, is Italy, of course. Joey Cunningham posting a brilliant match report here on the Coppa Italia final, which took place Wednesday night at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. It featured Lazio, more than familiar with that ground, against Sampdoria. This match, says Joey Cunningham, was enthralling end-to-end action in a packed Stadio Olimpico, had the feel of last year's English FA Cup final, dubbed the People's Cup final, as neither Doria nor the Aquile constitute Calcio's elite. Poor old Antonio Cassano assisted Pazzini's goal, the equaliser from Samp, but he missed the first spot kick. And Lazio on penalty, 6-5. Lazio, their first win up in this competition, 2004, which will come as a relief to many after four consecutive Roma against Inter finals, says Joey Cunningham. He mentions the spot kicks there. Muslera, who's really been the ugly duckling of Lazio's last couple of seasons, saving two penalties in the shootout and playing brilliantly there. And then tears on the sideline for Delia Rossi, the Lazio manager, who's not sure of securing his position, but he was blubbing all over the place. And a great goal from Mauro Zorati. I don't know if anybody, probably not you guys, but maybe somebody out there saw his fantastic goal against Roma in the Rome derby. It was a similar one yesterday to open the scoring. And Lazio go into the Europa League. Well done to them. One or two other posts. Alexan, what's the gossip coming from Italy? I heard Ibrahimovic saying that he wants to leave Inter with Madrid and Manchester United's favourite clubs. Story today is that Chelsea have been in for Ibrahimovic and he's turned them down.
I think Man United should buy him and play him up front with Berbatov.
That would be remarkable. I have the sneaky suspicion he is actually going to stay, not least because Inter, in their generosity, have made him the best paid player in the world. And I'm not sure if he'll get quite such favourable terms elsewhere.
And also leaving would involve walking quite quickly somewhere.
Too much effort. Do you know what? You're being a bit rough on Ibrahimovic, who whilst has spectacularly failed to come up with the goods in the big games, he has done brilliantly in the other ones and has scored 21 goals so
I've
far.
I've seen him on YouTube occasionally. He looks quite good.
Yeah, no, he puts in you know, the effort when...
When it's easy.
Yeah, all right. Will Carlo Ancelotti be going to Chelsea after what Papa Silvio said about Milan's league position?
Didn't that make you think that he is going and that's Berlusconi trying to pretend he's kicking him out?
Very, very possibly, very possibly. It all apparently stems from Berlusconi's big thing for Ronaldinho. And ever since Ancelotti started dropping Ronaldinho, because he basically cuts in on Kaká's playing room, there's been a bit of friction there. And thus Silvio announced that it's all Ancelotti's fault that they didn't win the title.
Will Berlusconi not just replace him with some scantily clad woman as he does in politics?
Disappointingly, Paul, no. Because this is one of the big stories in Italy.
Spalletti, if not he, he's certainly...
Well, I think Spalletti, that's all kind of gone a bit cold.
Has it gone, hasn't it?
Yeah, now they're going back to this theory that it's going to be a former Milan player because they like this big story about a family. There's been talk about Leonardo, the Brazilian, although he's clearly never had that kind of a role before. Frank Rijkaard, apparently, is one potential candidate. But today's Gazetta, Thursday morning's Gazetta, is big on the theory that Marco van Basten who was in many ways Berlusconi's first footballing love, and that's the one you never forget, as the Gazetta point out, will be coming back as manager, which, given his recent success rate, is a bit of a worrying thought. But it just has that feeling of being right somehow, that Berlusconi go, no, Marco's the man. That's it for an extremely lengthy part two. Still to come, loads of other stuff in part three, so stick around for that.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Now, plenty of people posting in. I don't know what's happened to the posting board. Did you know it's just gone postal? It's just
more and more people posting.
More and quite literally more people posting. I am, lots of people wonder about this, I am the one who sifts through it. And it is fascinating. Army of Lovers, we salute you. Don't know if you were fans of the Army Lovers. Around the world. That was there.
Oh, I am now.
Go and look them up. You'll enjoy their videos, Barney.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
You know about the Army of Lovers, don't you?
Well, it's Swedish cold synth reggae combo.
No. You're thinking of Ace of Base. They were a little bit like a kind of knowing and indeed humorous Swedish Dead or Alive slowed down a bit.
Oh, yeah,
they're kind of sumptuous gay Euro disco.
They're
the kind of music you would expect to see featured in Eurotrash back in the old Jean-Paul Gaultier mm-hmm. and Antoine de Caunes. Yeah, they're very much like a kind of musical version of Eurotrash, he said, warming to his theme. But anyway, some criticism of the pod being slammed down by other pods. I have to say that I do actually find people's negative comments as interesting as their positive ones on the. I mean, in the same way that we say criticise Chelsea and Liverpool and et cetera and all that and don't expect their fans to take offence, we don't really take offence if people do have negative comments to say. So there you go. Something that is offensive, though, would be, for example, Mendonça's post, "Please stop with the cheese-based puns. I can't bear it any longer," says Mendonça. Dirk, your interesting thread about two footballers making the best compound player. So we've got time for all of that now. Stopping, how about a nod to Truro City? They've just won their fourth consecutive promotion, all as champions, plus an FA Vase victory. They are now at the level below the conference. Their stated aim of becoming the first league team in Cornwall is another step closer. Okay, so they've got a sugar daddy. But they started out at level 10, and they can now realistically dream of league football. It's amazing, isn't it? Truro. And some serious stuff from McAleno. Who wants to talk about the five most improved players in the league. He nominates Andy Fay, Jagielka, Schwarzer, Cahill and Bramble. That's fair enough, isn't it? Anyone?
Yeah, I think Jagielka's been great for ages.
I think he's pretty good.
I mean, Jagielka was a fantastic signing at £4 million
right.
for everything.
All right, we'll try Cable 1973's list then. He's got Gomez, Baines, who apparently has been become the EPL's leading defender, sorry, the Premier League's leading defender in assists, despite only starting getting a regular first team place after Christmas. That's pretty good. Aaron Hughes, good lord, really? Okay. James Milner and Carlton Cole. Blimey, a bit eclectic that list.
Yeah.
The five players who've played considerably worse than last season. Well, great Barry Sanders compiles everybody else's suggestions on this, and it comes down to really Morten Gamst Pedersen, Adebayor, Scott Carson, Micah Richards, and David Bentley. Where is David Bentley?
He's kind of lounging on the bench.
Is he? Oh dear. Now, lots of other news this week. Should we quickly get Raphael Honigstein on the line if we can?
Hello.
Hi, Rafa. I'm just going to introduce you again. Introduce you again. Thanks for all of those posts. Guardian.co.uk/footballweekly, the place to have.
Who are you, mate?
Oh, I think we've dialed the wrong number.
Yeah,
beg your pardon. Sorry.
Have you got any views on football?
Bye bye.
That's hilarious.
Who are you, mate?
All right.
So if someone said that to me, I would at least have a view on football. You know?
All right.
Oh, what's the matter with him?
No,
call him back.
Okay. let's try again. Raphael Honigstein.
Hi.
Hi, Rafa. It is you.
Who's sniggering in the background?
We're all sniggering because we just dialed the wrong number. But we got the right man now, haven't we, Rafa? Listen, briefly, because it's been a long pod today, but the Germans were in action last night, is that right?
They were indeed.
And what's the situation at the top?
No change at the top.
Oh.
Five out of the top six won.
Right.
Which leaves the top four teams divided by 2 meagre points.
Right, OK. There has been change at the top at Bayern Munich, though.
Very much so. Louis van Gaal, 57-year-old Dutch maestro, and Calvinist Martinet, as Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung puts it, will be in charge.
Calvinist Martinet?
Yes.
I know what you mean, but would you like to explain that one for anyone who doesn't?
Someone who's very disciplinarian and
Martinez is punctiliousness in their pickiness. And what's been the reaction to this in Germany? Are Bayern fans happy about this appointment?
I think they would have been happy with almost anyone who's not named Jürgen Klinsmann
right.
at this stage. And I think it's a classic sort of counter-reaction after getting the smiling, young, novice Klinsmann in. Now they've got the 57-year-old, stern-faced, very experienced Dutchman who's going to dazzle everybody with his tactical expertise and perhaps with his big ego is just the right man in the job to keep everybody else's ego in check.
Is that your reading? Do you think it's a good appointment?
I think it remains to be seen. It's a very difficult environment to work in, especially if you are of strong opinions. Bayern have had weak managers in the past because they seem to have found it easier to adapt to interference from the top and also the players being very dominant. So it is a departure in that sense, and we'll see how serious Bayern and the board are of really entrusting somebody with more power next season.
Mm. In the meantime, Bayern are still sharing the lead with Wolfsburg, is that right?
They are. They're only two goals separated, these two teams. Wolfsburg are ahead by on goal difference. And Ulian Hoeneß was very unhappy because after their 3-0 win, he said we should have won by 6 or 8. And he was quite right. They could have easily scored more to effectively outscore Wolfsburg, who also won 3-0 against Dortmund. As it is, it could be yet another season that's going to be decided on goal difference.
Stuttgart won at Schalke last night. What's your prospects?
Well, they're only 2 points behind the top two, and they play Bayern in the last game of the season in Munich. So it could not only be a game that decides about the Champions League spots, but even decide the championship, provided that Hertha and Wolfsburg, of course, slip up as well. So they're very much in the mix, and they're certainly a team with momentum right now.
Brilliant. Thank you, Rafa, for joining us today. And look forward to speaking to you soon, or indeed anybody else that we happen to dial up by accident.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Honigstein.
I thought maybe we should start doing prank calls and murking people.
Yeah.
Was that a different kind of show?
No, that could be good. Whatever you care to bring to the party, I think, for Football Weekly, Barney. Speaking of which, didn't you have a specific job today?
I was going to mention the exciting forthcoming Guardian Football Supplement, which has the title The Seven Deadly Sins of Football.
Excellent. Well done. Now, Steve Coppell is out at Reading. Is he out of the game for good? It's a shame, isn't he? I like Steve Coppell.
This poor man spent ages putting these seven supplements that come out every day.
He clearly didn't want to talk about it, because I had to prompt him, and then he asked nicely you.
It's not an unfamiliar... No, this isn't an unfamiliar experience, is it, James, from our discussions of the supplement? I don't know if you remember your piece about... How is that piece about Gaza coming along?
It never started. Neither did the one about Berlusconi.
We had lots of talks about
it. We did, didn't we?
You know he was very good for this supplement. You know he was excellent. Rebecca Lowe.
Rebecca Lowe is fantastic.
Absolute professional.
She
brilliant.
Is.
Really good.
And so, a joy to work
must
with.
Must be a joy to work with.
She is a joy to work with.
Yeah.
So see again, Barney, when does it start? Tell people again, when does it start?
When it starts on Saturday.
And it runs through till...
It runs through for the next 7 days. I have all your favourite Guardian...
Including the Observer on Sunday.
Including Observer, yeah. Many of your favourite pod regular. Jonathan Wilson, Paul Doyle, Kevin McCarra.
Right.
All the favourites, I think. John Ashdown, Rafa Honigstein and Sid Lowe as well.
They've done pieces
yeah,
as well.
Most of the people who come into the pod.
Right. All.
Yeah,
all
Barry was also favorites. Down to do something. Although,
he didn't.
Well, it may have been a mistake giving him something to do with sloth. rather than actually writing about sloth, Barry produced a living installation of sloth.
Right.
It didn't make it in, but it was a joy to watch.
Couldn't you just printed a blank page under
with
sloth?
Barry Glendening
Barry
on sloth.
Glendening's byline. That would have been a superb.
I don't think they're ready for that. I don't think anyone's ready for that.
I tell you what I'm ready for. Sheffield are through to the final of the Championship playoffs, and they'll be taking on Burnley there, and that's why Steve Coppell resigned at Reading, etc., etc., etc. That's on the 25th of May. Well done to both teams. Barney, your team are in action today in the League One playoffs. I refer to Millwall.
Yeah, yeah.
You are a stereotypical Millwall fan, I have to say.
Pretty tasty geezer, if you get me going. No one likes me, but I don't care.
Right. Bizarrely, anyone wishing
to go to this game has to collect tickets at a motorway service station.
From the Millwall side, yeah. It's not even a service station. It's a...
Is George Graham making the arrangements for this?
Well, it is quite expensive, but it's a lorry park. Millwall fans have to stop at a lorry park, present a voucher.
Right.
Well, but presumably because they have to be hived off because everybody, you know, they can only smash up trees and pavements and lorries and things rather than city centre. I mean, it's slightly strange, and I don't think anyone's particularly happy about it.
Well, I can imagine. All right, well, best of luck to all concerned there, trees, etc. Speaking of other things which haven't happened yet, but we're still going to talk about anyway, the weekend's matches.
I'm going to the big battle for 11th place, Stoke v Wigan.
Excellent. Well, where are you going to, Kevin?
If I can get in, and this is a question, the Manchester United at the weekend, see if they can beat Arsenal, or even draw with Arsenal.
Barney, are you heading anywhere this weekend?
I will be watching it on television and then writing The Guardian's popular screen break column on my phone.
Oh, will you? Mm. What are you going to be reviewing? Have you got anything earmarked yet?
Well, I thought you can't really avoid the big game, can you? Although my favourite programme on sporting television at the moment is
Fingers crossed.
Well, I was going to say, if there's a programme on Sky called...
can you edit this bit? I have to tell you, we got a new producer today, and it's producer Scott. Now, anyway, sorry, Barney, tell us about this exciting show on Sky.
Okay. I'll save it for the column.
All right, okay. That's all we got time for, Barney, because it's the end of the pod. Who'd have thought? And lots of thanks and appreciation to producer Scott, who stepped into producer Pete's shoes. Not literally, because they're infected with something, so we wouldn't have been doing that. Producer Pete's got some sort of viral thing. And best of luck, and get well soon to producer Pete, if he's listening to this. And indeed, even if he's not. Paul Doyle, many thanks for your participation.
Thank you too, James.
Barney Roney.
Thanks.
Barney Roney's Apple. And Kevin McCarra.
A pleasure, thank you.
Ben, who pressed all the buttons and stuff. Thank you very much. And you, the listener, for traditionally enough doing the hard bit. And we'll be back on Monday. See you then.